Welcome to the Turkey Book Talk podcast. I'm William Armstrong, and in this podcast, I talk to authors about a newly released book on Turkey and its region. This week, I spoke to Marcus Dressler of Bayreuth University about his book, Writing Religion, The Making of Turkish Alevi Islam. The book examines how the idea of Alevism is actually an almost entirely modern concept, formulated towards the end of the Ottoman Empire as part of efforts to integrate disparate Anatolian religious groups into the Turkish and Muslim nation. My review of the book in the Hurriyet Daily News can be found via my blog, and I started by asking the author Marcus Dressler to outline the case he makes in the book.
Well, you know, I mean, the starting point for the whole project for me was just this observation that on the one side, there seems to be a pretty firm knowledge about who the Alevis are and what Alevism is. And all of this is negotiated, or most of that is negotiated with this term Alevism or Alevilik. I also know that the term Alevism itself, or Alevilik, has a relatively recent history, and that was not the concern of this book in itself, but it's of course kind of interesting to see that on the one side, there's this firmly established knowledge about who the Alevis are, and then you realize that the very term, the history of the very term, is kind of barely 100 years old. So I always found that interesting and always wanted to dig into kind of the historical background of this term coming into use for groups that were not usually labeled by that term earlier. And while looking into this genealogy of this concept or of this term, I realized that it's not only that the main story is not about like a new term being used for those groups who from outsiders or who were called by outsiders Kızılbaş, but that with the use of that new term came a new conceptualization of who these people are. You know, or what kind of the essentials of these groups that were now called Alevis were in terms of, you know, their cultural, how to situate them culturally and how to situate them religiously. So I realized that the actually interesting thing is this change in the knowledge about these groups who used to be called by this name Kızılbaş and other names and now are generally called Alevis. And so basically the book is an investigation, I mean, you read it, an investigation in the change, in the dynamics that led to this change of knowledge about these groups. So it's basically, you know, an analysis of the discourses on Alevism.
What was could you just explain the main conceptual difference between this older idea of the Kızılbaş, which was a kind of more sort of diverse grouping of Anatolian religious traditions, and Alevism, which is a much more, well, as you mentioned, a kind of modern concept, which is moving towards this kind of unified idea that kind of bundles these groups together?
Well, I mean, this term Kızılbaş is most people in Turkey know. I mean, it has like a pejorative meaning. It was not a term that those people who were called Kızılbaş would usually use for themselves. It was a term that was coined in a very particular historical context, late 15th, early 16th century, used then for the supporters of the Safavi Shah Ismail. And it was later on, it was used by the Ottomans for these Anatolian supporters of Shah Ismail, and then in the following centuries it would be used to those groups who have like a historical relation to these Kızılbaş or are believed to be in some way heretic from a Muslim perspective, from a Sunni Muslim perspective. So basically, Kızılbaş, I mean, was not only used for those groups who are today called Alevi, but it was mainly used for them, since there is, of course, a historical relation between these Alevis today and these historical Kizilbash groups from the 15th, 16th century, although it would be wrong to say that they're identical. So, I mean, these are very complex historical formations and developments. But they, well, the important thing, I think, for us here is that this notion of Kizilbash carried like negative meanings. I mean, it carried this meaning of heresy from an Islamic perspective. So Kizilbash is associated with being heretical, with being unreliable politically, with being socially and sexually committing kind of promiscuous, celebrating orgies in their rituals, committing incest and so forth, stereotypes that had been used actually also for other religious minorities in the region already centuries before. So the stereotypes themselves are very old, and they have been used also among Christians for accusing, you know, certain groups of heresy. So it's not something that is kind of generically Islamic, but these stereotypes were then associated with this concept of Kizilbashlik. Now, if we look at the modern term, this modern notion of Alevilik, then we see that like the major meanings associated with Alevism are this kind of this association with being something that is firmly situated within Turkish culture, although there is some consciousness among Alevis and among those who know about Alevism that it might not be explainable by references to Turkish culture at all. But this is the main kind of, let's say, cultural reference point. And then it's also situated within Islam, although through this notion of Islamic heterodoxy, it's at the same time positioned at the margins of Islam. So in a way, both these notions of being Turkish, although there's a certain consciousness that it's not only Turkish, so there's something from outside also within the package, and this notion of, well, Muslim, but at the same time heterodox Muslim, puts the Alevis in an ambivalent position within the context of a nation state. For they are Turkish, but, and at the same time they are Muslim, but. And, you know, how you accentuate the position of the Alevis within the nation state against, in relation to the center of the nation, which has always been defined as Muslim and as Turkish, that depends very much on the situation. So you can use this ambivalence that is inscribed in this notion of Alevism to have it work for or against the Alevis depending on you know, the political context. But obviously compared to these to these totally negative associations that the term Kizilbash carries, the new knowledge that the term Alevism carries was an improvement, one could say, for the Alevis, but an improvement with the context of the nation state. What it managed to do is to associate the Alevis to the Turkish nation as Turks, and to associate them also to the Turkish to the Muslim Turkish nation. Although this kind of integration was never, as I argue, was never complete, and this is one of the reasons for why situation of the Alevis have or still are today in an ambivalent position. It depends pretty much on the specific political constellation, whether the climate for them is positive or negative. And one can draw on this established knowledge about the Alevism to legitimate both things.
I want to come back to the contemporary situation later. But in the book, you describe this re-signification of the Kizilbash as Alevis as being motivated in part by the discovery of the Kizilbash by Western missionaries in the 19th century. So how was the development of the term Alevilik by Turkish nationalists a kind of response to the perceived threat of Western imperialism?
Well, if one looks at this reconceptualization of these groups using this term Alevism in the context of early Turkish nationalism, and by that we mean late late Young Turk period to 20s and 30s, then we see that there are many references to a previously established knowledge about Western theories about who the Alevis are. So we find in many of these early Turkish nationalist discussions on the Alevis, we find references to Western reports about the Alevis. We find references to Western reports which describe the Alevis in context of, well, or put them in a close relation to Armenians, Christians, or ancient Anatolian peoples. So, and these are references which at that time, so in the late Ottoman Empire, late Young Turk period, or then especially then after the World War I, were politically threatening from the nationalist perspective. Since, I mean, if one imagines especially the situation, well, after the Balkan Wars, 1912 to 1914, and then also kind of during World War I and then following World War I, it's a situations which already historically started earlier with the Ottomans losing gradually control over the Balkans, which had a lot to do with not only but mainly Christian people of the Balkans trying to separate from the Ottomans and under the banner of nationalism. There was an increasing fear among the Ottomans that something similar could also happen in Anatolia. And this is one of the contexts in which then reports, for example, by American missionaries about close relations between Kızılbaş Alevi communities and Armenians. Kızılbaş Alevi communities and the missionaries themselves, reports then by like Ottoman sources reporting about close communities between Kızılbaş Alevis and the missionaries, all of that build up this fear that the Kızılbaş Alevis could support the Armenians or could support Western imperial interests in Anatolia, could position themselves against the Ottomans. This put, from the Ottoman perspective, these Kızılbaş Alevi communities, this gave them a new political leverage in this late Ottoman situation. It is from within this situation that one has to understand why under Sultan Abdülhamid, we have for the first time this phenomenon of the Ottoman state going into Kızılbaş Alevi villages and building mosques there. So this was part in the 1890s of the first campaign of trying to move the Alevis or the Kızılbaş Alevis closer to Islam, to make them part of, like we could say, the Ottoman nation, to make them Muslim, so they could not be, so with the hope that that would prevent them from making some political alliances with non-Muslim forces, which could then eventually kind of increase the trouble in which the Ottomans were already in. For the Ottomans, how to situate the Alevis in terms of religion was not a major concern. It was for them, you know, they are heretics, and well, they might be Muslim or not. There were at times they were used, they were called also by certain Sheikh al-Islams. They were called unbelievers, kafir. But, you know, it wasn't a big issue for the Ottomans, you know, whether the Kızılbaş are still Muslim or not Muslim anymore. It was not like a real issue. But now it became an issue. It became an issue in the late 19th century with especially with Armenian nationalism becoming stronger and with imperial interests, Western imperial interests in Anatolia becoming stronger. And so this is the context for why we have this first interest in the Alevis and this interest in declaring and making sure to the European political elite that we count the Alevis as, or the Kızılbaş Alevis as, Muslims.
What about the idea that that many modern Alevis have kind of bought into the idea that they're a united whole that's historically part of the Turkish nation. It's well known that many Alevis are now loyal Kemalists. What do you make of this self-identification of the Alevis as a more unified group today? And also, how has religious practice among the Alevis become more standardized over time?
Well, I think that both processes are not completed. I mean, as I describe in my book, part of discussing these what I call Ochak-centered groups, since I think like the main kind of socio-religious thing that these groups that are discussed today as Alevis share is the Ochak, these sacred lineages around which these groups are organized. A part of what this new concept tried to do is to homogenize these traditions. So if we look at these Ochak-centered groups in their historical form, there we see that it's a very complex, very complex hierarchies, and well, in between the groups, and they are not, it's not a unified system. It never was somehow, there is no kind of central authority or anything like that, and there are different traditions. Different branches of traditions, some of which are relatively closely connected, others have no connections with each other at all. And so basically at the beginning also this term Alevi was only used as like an umbrella term. And this is also how one still should understand it today. But somehow this term Alevism began to suggest and then was more and more used as if it would represent a homogeneous group. And this is still not the case today. I mean, there are still parts who, well, you will still find Alevis who reject this term Alevi, who say, you know, we are not Alevi, we did not used to call us like that, we are members of this and this Ochak, or belong to this and this group. And so there is still some resistance to this project. But still, it is obviously true, as you indicated, that most Alevis, most of these Ochak-centered groups, they call themselves Alevi, and they feel as Alevi, and there is an Alevi solidarity, and it is of course also. So this Alevism is of course also a social fact today, which has a history in terms of we can show historically that the main social and religious traditions and their rituals and these social organizations, they have like century old history. So in that sense, as a social reality, these Alevis communities, they are not, that would be a misreading of my work, we're not talking about a modern invention. The modern invention relates to this label Alevilik, and there's a transformation about the knowledge of what is kind of, what are the main things that characterizes this group, and how do we situate them ethnically, nationally, religiously. But if we look at the practices itself, there we can see a continuity. Yeah, but still, this question of homogeneity or heterogeneity is of course a very political also in Turkey today. I mean, if you know that, if we say that, let's say roughly of one of four or one of five Alevis today has like a Kurdish background, then it becomes like immediately obvious that this kind of, that there are some political implications to the question, you know, to which extent are they Turkish and what does it mean them being Turkish? But of course, and most Alevis recognize that Alevism is deeply associated with Turkish culture, but this majority of Alevis who sees that they are of course the Turkish Alevis. I mean, the majority of the Kurdish Alevis would not see that. They would not share that knowledge. They never did. They have. They also have, of course, very different experiences with Kemalism, with Mustafa Kemal Atatürk, or with the historical process, with the formation of modern Turkey. So there are certainly some deep lines between various Alevi communities.
Just to conclude, let's talk about the present-day situation of the Alevis, because there's constant talk about some kind of future Alevi opening on the part of the ruling AKP. How does the AKP's conception of the Alevis bear the traces of this nationalist resignification that you describe in your book?
Well, I mean, you know, there have been Alevi openings, or there have been political moves that were called Alevi opening before, and these openings then have been closed again. And well, we do not know what the new government will. Probably they will again, or it's possible that they again will start something like an Alevi opening. But this has been a rhetoric for at least 10 years. And, well, it has even a longer history, but not with the term Alevi opening, but somehow improving the situation of the Alevis, or giving in to some of their demands in terms of being increasing their status or their recognition within Turkish society and in relation to the state. And, well, I think, you know, the whole this question of openings, and as you know, they're not only Alevi, there's not only the Alevi opening, then the much bigger question is, will there be another Kurdish opening, or how will this peace process continue in the close future? So now after the AKP has regained absolute majority in parliament, maybe we can expect that there will be a more conciliatory approach to the Kurds as well. But what is one of the characteristics of all of these openings, Kurdish, Alevi, and so forth, is that what the AKP showed so far in its position, and there it is very, very strongly in the tradition of in the Kemalist statist tradition, one could say, is that when they negotiate with the Alevis or the Kurds, they always make very much clear that in the end, it's not a negotiation among equals. It's, well, basically the state then always dictating, you know, what are the parameters in which such a negotiation of new rights can take place. What are kind of the limits and what are the possibilities? And I think that one of the problems is that groups which define themselves different from the mainstream, or different from what appears to be acceptable in the mainstream, in kind of the mainstream identity, within the mainstream identity discourse of Turkey, they are not allowed to simply state for themselves who they think they are, and, you know, how they relate themselves to these major identity categories. So how they relate to the Turkish nation, how they relate to Islam.
That was Marcus Dressler talking about his book, Writing Religion, The Making of Turkish Alevi Islam. If you haven't already, you can subscribe to this podcast via iTunes, Podbean, or SoundCloud. If you liked it, please do rate it on iTunes, which helps spread the word and make it easier for people to find. Meanwhile, until next time, thank you very much for listening. Tellidir, tellim anam, tellidir, tellidir amma.